Good afternoon.
Let's resume this. We've been in recess since this morning, and we'll resume our meeting of the title setting board. Kind of review procedures since this is a different set of initiatives this afternoon. First of all, my name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Hoffman. To my right is Dan Domenico, who is the Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. And then to my left is Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. For the record, the date is February 20th, 2008, and the time is 1:35 p.m., and we're in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. Our procedure for each initiative is that we first hear from proponents and find out if the title setting board has questions about the proposal. It's important that we make sure we understand each proposal. And then our second order of business for each initiative is to determine if the board has jurisdiction to set a title, which means finding out if making sure that the measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. And then third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction, then it will proceed to set titles using a staff-prepared draft, which for each initiative is on the table by the back door. To my far right is Ceci Gomez from the Secretary of State's office. If anybody is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board today, then that person may file a motion for rehearing within 7 days with the Secretary of State's office. A decision is reached by 2 out of 3 members of the title board. A sign-up sheet for each measure is on the table by the back door, so if anybody wishes to testify, please be sure and sign up. So with that, let's turn to the next agenda item, which is 2007-2008, number 61, Federal Standards for Discrimination, Preferential Treatment by Colorado Governments. If we could first hear from a representative of the proponents, Melissa Hart, I believe, if you'll come forward, identify yourself and who you represent.
Hi, my name is Melissa Hart, and I represent the proponents of Proposed Initiative 61. First, I guess I should just say that the title set by the title board and sent to us does accurately reflect the aims of the proponents with this measure, which is to suggest an amendment concerning the prohibition of denial of equal opportunity by ensuring that modest equal opportunity programs remain possible in Colorado.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Mr. Domenico?
Yeah. Tell me if I'm wrong, but my reading of current standards set under the United States Constitution as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court allow for some forms of preferential treatment, maybe not necessarily to groups, but to individuals on the basis of race, sex, color, some of those at least, not necessarily all. So my question is, doesn't the second sentence in Section 1 of your measure contradict the first sentence?
No, sir, I don't think it does at all. While it is certainly open to interpretation that the standards set under the U.S. Constitution as interpreted by the Supreme Court allow some forms of preferential treatment, I think it's equally reasonable to interpret the court's cases as not permitting preferential treatment, but permitting some forms of really extremely modest equal opportunity programs that would not constitute preferential treatment. But to the extent that the Supreme Court's opinions would permit some form of preferential treatment, that is, set-asides or quotas that would disadvantage other groups based on protected characteristics, nobody is in favor of quotas. The proponents of this measure are not in favor of quotas, and are clearly so stating in putting forward this initiative, and the Colorado Constitution would make clear that that kind of preferential treatment is not permitted, at the same time ensuring that that term is not defined to encompass the kinds of modest equal opportunity programs that create fair and equal opportunity for all Colorado citizens. And that's the goal of these proponents. I do not think the statements are inconsistent.
Well, I appreciate what you say about quotas, and I agree that the Supreme Court has said quotas are most likely unconstitutional. But the measure doesn't refer to quotas. It refers to preferential treatment, which I don't have the cases in front of me, but I think the Supreme Court has essentially said in the context of forms of preferential treatment, such as affirmative action, which I think is what we're really talking about here, affirmative action and those sorts of programs, while they're preferential treatment, are not quotas, and they're allowed under the Constitution, at least for now, according to Supreme Court precedent. And, is that use of preferential treatment seems to be both what the Supreme Court has been talking about is allowed and is not the same thing as quotas. And so if this were just talking about quotas, then we would have a different situation. But you would agree that there's been some form of affirmative action has been allowed by the Supreme Court, right?
I think there's obviously a great deal of interpretive debate about whether affirmative action programs constitute preferential treatment or don't constitute preferential treatment. I think those kinds of substantive interpretive questions, again, obviously there's a great deal of debate about them, but I don't think there's an inconsistency between these two sentences in the initiative. I think it's clear what the proponents seek to achieve with this initiative, which is to ensure equal opportunity for the citizens of Colorado, and that's defined in the initiative and is clear in the title and is not inconsistent.
Well, let me ask you about that. What does the first sentence do then? What's the intent of the first sentence?
Well, sir, I think that's clear from the sentence, and I guess I don't want to get into debates about what might happen in the future as it's applied to specific circumstances.
I appreciate that, and I don't either. But what I'm trying to get at is it really does seem to me that the first two sentences basically are contradictory. And so if I could understand what the first sentence was really trying to do, because the second sentence is fairly straightforward, which is to say that the state can do anything that is allowable under Supreme Court interpretation of the federal Constitution. So then I'm trying to figure out what does the first sentence do? Because to me, currently under Supreme Court precedent, states can give some kinds of preferential treatment. And now, I appreciate your argument that affirmative action isn't preferential treatment, but I'm not convinced. And so I guess that's where I'm trying to figure out then what would the first sentence of subsection 1 do?
And again, I'm afraid that I don't feel comfortable trying to make up in the hypothetical circumstances that this might apply to. I think it's clear on the face of the initiative what the proponents seek to do, which is to be clear that the citizens of Colorado don't favor discriminatory preferential treatment, but that they do favor the modest equal opportunity programs that the court has permitted under the U.S. Constitution.
Okay.
Well, let me approach the question maybe from the point of view of the second sentence. I think it's a good question. I think literally the second sentence seems to say, kind of notwithstanding whatever the first sentence says, the measure isn't prohibiting anything that's consistent with standards set out under the U.S. Constitution. And that does seem like, on its face, literally read, that anything that's been upheld by the U.S. It doesn't say by any particular court, but anything that may be lawful is permitted. And so sort of comes back to the same question: what is left once you have a sentence like that says this measure doesn't prohibit anything that's already lawful? under the U.S. Constitution. What is left for the first sentence to prohibit? Does that help?
I understand the question. I just don't. I think that at this time, going into questions of specific laws that might or might not be illegal under this constitutional provision, if adopted by the citizens of the state of Colorado, is premature. And that the measure speaks for itself. The language makes clear that preferential treatment would not be permissible under the Constitution of Colorado, discriminatory preferential treatment, but it would not, that is, it says prohibiting this great state from discriminating against or granting preferential treatment to, so we're talking about discriminatory preferential treatment, but the kinds of equal opportunity programs that would not constitute discriminatory preferential treatment would not be prohibited. The kinds of equal opportunity programs that have been found to be constitutional would not be prohibited. I think it speaks for itself.
Well, let me ask, you may not want to answer this one either then, but this measure is somewhat similar to a measure that we've seen before, number 31. But in this respect, the second sentence is different than the approach taken by number 31. You may not want to answer this question, but what is the difference then? I mean, do you see that these two measures basically effectively saying the same thing while respecting Supreme Court precedent and so forth?
No, I do not think the two measures say the same thing. I think that Amendment 31, although I understand that the attorney supporting Amendment 31 or arguing in favor of Amendment 31 also didn't want to specify what specific programs might be outlawed under that initiative. It is clear that it's intended to be extremely broad, I think dangerously broad, and that it's intended to wipe out programs that wouldn't constitute, in the proponents of Initiative 61's view, discriminatory preferential treatment. I think the two amendments are doing something different. One is putting Colorado into a position of uncertainty and litigation risk, and the other is ensuring a safety net that would preserve the equal opportunity programs, very modest recruitment training programs that are allowed under the U.S. Constitution.
Okay.
So just a quick follow-up on that. I take it if both of those measures were to be put on the ballot and passed, you don't think they both would be enforceable. One would have to... They conflict with each other in such a way that one would have to be interpreted as taking preference over the other.
I think if it comes to that point, if the voters of the state of Colorado adopt both initiatives, the Colorado Supreme Court will have to determine whether and how they can be interpreted consistently with each other, and if not, then follow settled rules for deciding which one will take precedence. I don't think they conflict in any sense that's relevant today. That is, the titles aren't conflicting in such a way that they couldn't be on the ballot together. I think they're not conflicting in that sense. And whether they could be enforced together, again, I think that's a question that the Colorado Supreme Court will address if it comes to that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that if they conflicted that they couldn't both be on the ballot. I'm just, as a way of trying to interpret, since we sort of figured out, I think, what 31 was trying to do, if we could figure out if this conflicts with it or is meant to supplement it or does the same thing, and you said it definitely doesn't do the same thing. So it seems to me that at least this second sentence conflicts pretty directly with it. I think their intent that is fairly, as you said, is to eliminate a lot of programs that are currently lawful, whereas the second sentence here is intended to preserve programs that are allowed under current law. And that, to me, does seem to be a conflict, and that in itself I don't think is a problem for setting a title. It just, to me, is helpful at trying to figure out what the various sentences here are trying to do. And so, I mean, Tell me if I'm wrong, but
nope,
that second sentence is intended to
It's intended to define and illuminate the meaning of the first sentence in Initiative 61. That is, nothing in Initiative 61's language should be interpreted to eliminate the kinds of equal opportunity programs that have been found constitutional. So if the two were both passed, Again, I think the Supreme Court would have to decide how they went together, but that is certainly true with regard to Initiative 61.
All right, thanks.
Ms. Eubanks.
I'm not sure I want to get into this discussion here, but would it be fair to say that the second sentence really creates an exception to the prohibition in the first sentence?
Yes, I think that's a reasonable way to describe it.
Thank you.
Well, if there aren't any other questions, let's move on to the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. And I don't know whether anyone else, I don't have anybody else signed up to testify on this sign-up sheet. Is there, if there's somebody else wants to testify on the question of whether this measure is complies with the single subject requirement, then we'd like to hear from you now. Would you like to testify? Does it, about single, about single subject? Does it relate to whether the measure comprises a single subject? Okay. I mean, and then we'll, you know, if the, as I think you might have come in late, if the board finds that it has, yeah, that's okay. But we first decide if the measure comprises a single subject, and then if it does, then we move on to set the titles. Is there anybody who wishes to testify on the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement? And there may be some others that have signed up. I'm not sure if you want to check. Yeah, maybe it's just the other one, but okay. Okay. Well, I'll just turn to board discussion about whether the measure comprises a single subject. Any discussion by the board?
Well, I think, as I've said, I think section, well, the first two sentences, the two sentences in subsection one do essentially opposite things. And the first part eliminates, says it's eliminating discrimination or preferential treatment. And then the second, in a roundabout way, preserves it because under existing law, preferential treatment of certain types is allowed. And whether you could characterize that as an exception, I think the fact of the matter is subsection 2 eliminates any effect that the first section would have. And the two are, if not completely opposite subjects in my mind, are misleading and confusing. One could write a measure that eliminates quotas or says the state shall not use quotas, but other forms of preferential treatment are allowed. And that, I think, might not be confusing, but that's not what this does. This says, initially, no preferential treatment, and then effectively in the second sentence says preferential treatment is okay. Those are two contradictory subjects in my mind, and so I can't vote for it.
Further discussion, or I don't know. Actually, Ms. Hart, if you'd like to respond to that, I think it.
As I understand the Supreme Court's interpretations of Colorado Constitution Article 5, Section 5.5, and Revised Statute 140.106.5, the single subject rules, the single subject is supposed to be interpreted very liberally and is only supposed to prohibit a title from including two distinct or separate purposes that are not connected with each other. So while obviously one can debate the merits of this initiative, I don't think that there's a, I don't think it violates the single subject rule. It seems to me that there's pretty clearly a single subject here, and that the that everything included in the initiative is connected and is not distinct or separate and unrelated.
Well, and I think one can agree with all that and agree that they are related to the subject of preferential treatment or equal opportunity, but what we also can't do under the single subject without addressing the merits of whether it's a good idea, we can't adopt something simply because they're related that purport to do confusing or contradictory things. which is what I think is going on here.
Well, and with respect, I guess I just disagree with that. I don't think there is a conflict between the two provisions. I don't think it's confusing. I think it's clear what the proponents are trying to do, which is to allow the citizens of Colorado to state clearly in a constitutional amendment that they're opposed to illegal preferential treatment, but also that they favor the kinds of modest equal opportunity programs that are currently in force in some areas in the state and that are permissible under the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, and I'm a little torn between two conflicting principles, I think, that we follow under the case law. And both of them are sort of based on the fact that I really don't entirely understand the relationship between the first and the second sentence. But one of those principles is that, it's not up to us to interpret, to figure out, to make legal interpretations. And maybe that's what this is. We're just trying to define a little more clearly what's the effect, and maybe that should just be left to post-enactment interpretation, as the case may be. The other principle is that if we don't understand a measure well enough to know whether or not it comprises a single subject, then we're not supposed to set a title. And this feels a little like that too. If I understood it a little better, if this were a minor detail that we were struggling to know what was the legal effect of that, I wouldn't have this struggle. But on the other hand, the second sentence somehow seems to have such a major effect on the first sentence that I'm still struggling with what's left. What is the real effect? What's the subject? What's the purpose? It's still not entirely clear to me, and that's troubling. So. And I think that it's not exactly what Mr. Domenico expressed, but I think it amounts to the same thing, is that it's possible there's more than one subject here, although if I understood it a little better, I might feel otherwise. I don't think more than one subject is intended, perhaps, but without understanding the legal effect a little better, I'm still not quite convinced that there's only one subject.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I'm in a predicament because, of course, I feel clear that there's a single subject here, and I feel like the intent of the proponents in putting forward this initiative and supporting this initiative is clear, which is elimination of illegal preferential treatment, discriminatory preferential treatment, but preservation of equal opportunity programs that might otherwise be at risk. And yet I also am extremely loath to get into what I think really is more appropriately post-enactment interpretation and more appropriately handled once the voters of Colorado have spoken in whatever way they do. I'm very uncomfortable looking at specific programs and saying how it would affect specific programs at this time. But I do think that the intent of the proponents is to have a single topic in this initiative, which is to ensure the preservation of equal opportunity programs.
Okay. Well, and frankly, I'm probably at this moment inclined to find a single subject. I might feel differently if there were a motion for rehearing. I mean, if that's where the decision of the title board and a motion for rehearing were filed or something, or if there's other arguments that come about. But I think at this point I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt, but I think it's a close call. So, Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of how the two sentences interrelate, or what the effect of the second sentence is on the first, it, to me, goes more to the legal effect, and I admit that I'm no constitutional scholar on discrimination or preferential treatment or any of those types of subjects. But it seems to me that the second sentence somehow makes an exception to the general prohibition of the first sentence. And to me, what the effect of that exception is, what that leaves, if anything, in terms of what is prohibited by the first sentence, I'm not sure that that's something for the title board to be deciding. I think that's something for the courts to be dealing with. if this goes on the ballot and the voters approve it. To me, the second sentence appears to make an exception to the general prohibition. To me, it's one subject, it's all one purpose, and so I would have no problem in going forward and setting a title with the finding that the measure constitutes a single subject. But
well, and I would just say to that, I mean, the proponents have stated that the purpose of this is to preserve the limited equal opportunity programs, as they call them, that currently exist. That's what the second sentence does. The first sentence hides that purpose, in my opinion, and says something that essentially, to the average reader, says just the opposite of that. And I find that confusing to such an extent that they, in fact, if this were written slightly differently, instead of relying on Supreme Court precedent and simply said the state shall not grant preferential treatment, and then in another section said this shall not be interpreted as in such a way that prohibits the state from granting preferential treatment, I think that would be such a confusing measure that it's impossible to set a title because we can't understand what it does. And I think the first sentence is, if not directly contradictory to the second, it hides the purpose of the measure, which is in the second sentence. And I think under the single subject statutes, we have to vote against a measure that contains two contradictory purposes.
Well, I think about that. The gentleman that came in, did you decide whether or not what you wanted to tender related to the single subject question?
All I'd say is I'd like to see the state grant preferential.
Well, I if you're going to testify, I'd need you to come to the microphone so that we get you on the record. And if you'll identify yourself, please, and if you represent someone, who you represent.
I'm George Walker. I'm a CU grad. Currently, I'm a candidate for the presidency of CU. I have two cases in the U.S. District Court regarding issues of affirmative action, preferential treatment. In 1994, Colorado Civil Rights Division, and Chief Judge, he wasn't Chief Judge then, Richard Mache, ruled I was qualified to be president of CU, but Judge Mache ruled that I'd have to pass for Anglo, Black, Jewish, or Native American in order to go forward with a Title VII case because multiracial people do not exist on the census. Now, what I'm driving at, there's discrimination that occurs towards many people, and we need fairness, in some cases affirmative action, for protected classes. More to the point, I agree with the point that our EEOC equal opportunity programs, so-called affirmative action programs, at this point should not be lessened. I remind you of the 2003 decision called Rutter v. Bollinger, decided split vote, I think it was 5-4, the Supreme Court, which said that we need some of these protections, perhaps help, for about the next 25 years to achieve diversity as defined by, I think it was a 1978 California case, Bakke v. Board of Regents, University of California. Now, to the point of what I wanted to do.
And Mr. Walker, excuse me for interrupting. I do want to be clear that the title board here is not concerned with the merits. whether it's a good or a bad proposal.
I understand that.
We simply want to know whether it's a single subject and then what the fair titles would be.
I understand that. That's why, to the point, okay. I think the law should stay at least where they are at present. And that's in connection with what the gentleman was saying.
Okay.
And so if you want me to specify, I also would like to, it's according to your discretion, enter some documents into the record.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Walker? Thank you. Okay. Further discussion on the single subject question? Oh, Ms. Hart, yes.
Sorry. I guess as I've been sitting here reflecting on your last comment, and it strikes me more strongly than it did in the ways you had put it earlier, how much I think your objection is a question of legal interpretation. And that is, you are resting your vision, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're resting your vision of these two sentences as conflicting on your perspective, your interpretation of the meaning of the second sentence, that is, what it means that something would be allowed under the Constitution as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court. In your view, as you've expressed it, the U.S. Supreme Court's interpretation of the U.S. Constitution currently allows preferential treatment. That's a deep interpretive question, what the court is saying, what is permitted by the court, and whether that's preferential treatment, and whether, therefore, that would be in conflict with a prohibition on preferential treatment. And I guess I feel like that's exactly the kind of thing that the U.S., that the Colorado courts could interpret if the voters chose to approve this measure were it on the ballot, that it is as Ms. Eubanks said, exactly that kind of interpretation of what the relationship between the first and second sentences precisely is, that is supposed to be a matter for the courts. But the two sentences together are clearly addressed to a single subject, which is preservation of equal opportunity and elimination of discrimination, and that's a single subject as required under Colorado law.
I appreciate that. And I don't deny that what I'm doing requires me to interpret and interpret what the second sentence would mean and how it interrelates, especially with the language about preferential treatment in the first sentence. But on the other hand, I don't think that we can just throw our hands up and say, well, I don't know what this means or how it would play out, and therefore it's got to be a single subject. I mean, it seems to me, well, I don't need to belabor it, but it seems to me you've stated that the purpose of the measure is to preserve equal opportunity programs. That, I think, is what the second sentence does, as I interpret it. On the other hand, I think the first sentence, even if I'm not sure this requires me to get into legal interpretation as much as kind of ask, as we often do, what would a typical voter think the first sentence means. And I think the typical voter would read the first sentence as saying something very different from the second sentence. That's all I'm saying. And I appreciate it, and you know, you may have just caught me when I have the flu and I'm in a bad mood today, so I apologize. But I that's where I am.
Well, and I am going to belabor it further because I don't have a flu excuse, but I don't know that I'm following all the discussion, so I'm going to start over again in a way. I'm increasingly concerned maybe that the measure is almost deceptive. Because of the interplay between the first and second sentence. And I guess I'd like to know a little more clearly, what does the measure actually accomplish? What change in the law is accomplished by this measure?
So, again, in terms of specifying particular programs, I'm not comfortable doing that. But the goal of the proponents is to ensure and enshrine in the Constitution the principle that the state of Colorado will not engage in discriminatory preferential treatment, while also ensuring that modest equal opportunity programs are preserved. So I think, again, Ms. Eubanks referred to the second sentence as an exception to the first sentence. And you might also think of it as a definitional exception. as the proponents wish to ensure that preferential treatment that is discriminatory does not include the kinds of programs like recruitment programs, like grants to women's health clinics that would be that are on the basis of the fact that they serve women. Those could be considered to be discriminatory, and yet women's health clinics are fundamental to the health of women in Colorado, women and children in Colorado. We want to ensure that the kinds of equal opportunity programs that are very limited and very modest and are fit within the current constitutional scheme are not defined to be as illegal under discriminatory preferential treatment. So that, again, I referred when Mr. Domenico and I were talking earlier, the proponents believe that quota hiring is appropriately impermissible. That is, I mean, is in fact impermissible, should be made clear in our Constitution that that is impermissible, and they support strongly a statement to that effect. At the same time, they wish to be certain that discriminatory preferential treatment is not defined to eliminate some of the important programs or make impossible for future enactment important programs that ensure equal opportunity to Colorado citizens. So the two things work together, I think, not in conflict with each other. Again, I think the exception or definitional character of the second sentence as helping to elucidate the first sentence is the way that I would think about it, not as in conflict with the first sentence.
Well, are you saying that under this proposal, some affirmative action programs could continue and some could not? I mean, a quota program could not, at least that's the intent, although I suppose if some court upheld one, maybe it could, because that would be a standard under the U.S. Constitution. But
the provision makes clear that we're talking about interpretation of the U.S. Constitution by the U.S. Supreme Court. So if some court, renegade court, said, oh, quotas are permissible, that wouldn't affect Colorado.
Okay. So some affirmative action would be okay and some would not?
Yes, I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
Affirmative action is, of course, a very contentious and disputed term, and what exactly is meant by affirmative action is heavily disputed. But equal opportunity programs designed to ensure a level playing field for all Colorado citizens would be preserved under this measure.
And I am using the terms somewhat loosely, but I'm to include aggressive recruitment, for example. And I think you're saying that would be okay.
To include recruitment programs, yes.
Even though that might, to some people, that might be affirmative action. I mean, other people, I think, view it as, and maybe I'm wrong about this, that some people think of affirmative action as equivalent to a quota program, which
right,
I view.
And I think that, I mean, that goes to the merits of the question. Do you support equal opportunity programs, or do you think there should be no equal opportunity programs? And I think there are interpretive and definitional questions here. Some people would say any equal opportunity program constitutes preferential treatment. The proponents of this initiative do not believe that any equal opportunity program constitutes illegal preferential treatment. They believe that preferential treatment is understood as discriminatory conduct like, again, quota hiring, and that when you get beyond discriminatory preferential treatment, there is a range of important equal opportunity measures that should be preserved under Colorado's law.
Okay. Further discussion by the board? Thank you. Mr. Walker? Yeah, this is to the single subject question.
Reply directly to what you and she have said.
It's George Walker again. The word quota has entered into the conversation by the woman testifying and the chair. I'd just like to make it clear, to my knowledge, Rutter v. Boehringer, Bakke v. California, talked about goals and diversity. I don't know of anyone associated with the University of Colorado at this point, including the Board of Regents, who talks about quotas. We talk about diversity and we talk about goals. I think anyone in this day and age who knows uses the word quota is asking for a court challenge. They're asking to be, in effect, attacked. The word quotas is just not used by civil rights attorneys that I'm acquainted with. I think we should go along with the court talk about critical mass. That's the words of Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, to achieve a critical mass. And of course, the issue here is when you get into numerical goals, at what point do you have a critical mass? It seems to me that that's the issue, not whether it's a quota or not. Quotas are out.
Okay, thank you. Again, I guess I'm probably where I was before, that I, for at least for purposes of today, I'm probably willing to give the benefit of the doubt towards single subject, but I don't know that I would sustain that position if there were a motion for rehearing. Ms. Eubanks.
That being the case, I would move that the title board find that proposed initiative number 61 constitutes a single subject and that we proceed with setting a title.
I'll second that. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Then let's proceed to look at the staff drafts. Ms. Gomez is going to project them on the screen. Copies, I think, are available on the table. Ms. Hart, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments about the staff draft?
No.
Okay. Is there anybody who wishes to testify on the staff drafts? Discussion by the board on the staff drafts? Ms. Eubanks?
If I could ask Ms. Hart a question, since they're satisfied with the draft. And I have to state that I wasn't sitting on the title board when number 31, the title was set for that. And so I'm, although I've read all those materials that went along, and there are similarities between the language of 31 and this one, one of the differences that I noted in terms of the title that this board set for 31 versus the title currently before us for 61 is on the statement of the single subject, that 31 was concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state, and for 61 it's concerning prohibiting the state from denying equal opportunity to persons. Now, the first sentence of 61 seems to read identical to the first provision in 31. Is it the effect of the second sentence that changes the nature of the measure from dealing with purely discrimination, as was 31, as its single subject statement, versus equal opportunity under 61? Am I being clear?
Yes, I think I understand. Yes, I think that's right. I think it's the interaction of the two sentences in Amendment 61, Initiative 61, that make it appropriate to refer to the single subject of that of our initiative as being concerning prohibiting the state from denying equal opportunity. Whereas, you know, I can't speak to the goals of the proponents of Initiative 31, but.
And with that response, in terms of the statement of single subject, if that's true, do you think that truly the measure is prohibiting the state from denying equal opportunity versus sort of preserving equal opportunity in terms of the effect of the second sentence of the measure? I mean, it seems like from the plain language of the first sentence, you're talking a prohibition, but if it's the effect of the second sentence
okay.
in preserving certain types of programs, whatever they may be, and as you've referred to as equal opportunity type programs, I'm just wondering whether the statement of the single subject as currently exists in the staff draft is an accurate description of the measure.
So I have a couple of reactions. I think that's an excellent point, and I could see how the title might read instead an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the preservation of equal opportunity, and it might say also to persons and groups, given that it does talk about both persons and groups. That's I guess I would also say that I think I think that the goal of the proponents is both to preserve equal opportunity and to prohibit the state from denying equal opportunity. That is, without the preservation of some equal opportunity programs, the denial of equal opportunity that would occur is one of the serious concerns of the proponents. So I think your point is quite excellent. But when I first read the staff draft, I guess it hadn't struck me, because I do think this also is part of the goal of the proponents. But I think it certainly could be put sort of in the affirmative, I guess, as to preserve concerning the preservation of equal opportunity to persons.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a follow-up on that. I don't think this accurately reflects it, because nothing in this, as I read it, if the state were to voluntarily, the legislature passed laws getting rid of all the equal opportunity programs, as you call them, if the state voluntarily got rid of all those, nothing in this prevents the state from doing that, right? It just preserves the right of the state to have them if it wishes
to. So then, in fact, putting it in terms of preservation of rather than prohibition against denial of may be a more accurate reflection of the legal implication of the proponent's initiative. I think that's correct.
I just want to make sure that's my interpretation of what the second sentence does. I still think it is confusing with the first sentence, but I'd want to make sure we agree at least on what the state could and couldn't do.
Any changes to the staff draft?
Well, yeah, before we get to that, what, is equal opportunity the right word to use here? I know that's the word the proponents have chosen, and I wouldn't want to replace it with affirmative action or something like that, but, that phrase doesn't appear anywhere in the measure and really seems to me to require the kind of, I mean, that really is a legal interpretation of what's going on. It seems to me that it's doing something along those lines, but only if you agree that what the second sentence does has to do with equal opportunity programs, which I think is kind of a little bit of a tendentious term in the same way that affirmative action maybe on the other side is a tendentious term, if you see what I'm saying.
Yes, I see what you're saying. And I guess I, not surprisingly, perhaps disagree. I think that equal opportunity is not a legal term of art. It's political, historical, and you see it in the literature about certainly discrimination, both legal and sociological, over the course of the past, I could say at least 50 years and probably more, and it's something that is understandable to people, equal opportunity. Now, obviously, again, one can disagree with whether this is substantively the best goal or the best way to do it, but what the measure is seeking to do is to preserve equal opportunity, I think is accurate and is not a term of art.
I mean, I agree that I'm not taking any position on whether this is the right way to do it or not. I just wonder if, and really, I think I'm trying to do you a favor here by leading you away from potential trouble with using kind of politically charged terms, which can lead to difficulty down the road. And equal opportunity, I think. Obviously, that's how you interpret these programs. Other people, I think, don't view them as equal opportunity. And where terms have such charged meanings and different meanings to people on different sides, I think we're in real danger of having the title thrown out if we adopt one side's use of a term. And so I'm just not entirely clear that it's, you know, if, for example, this said, if this measure were written in such a way that it said the state shall not deny equal opportunity to persons and then defined equal opportunity as, you know, it can continue these kinds of programs, then I think we'd be on okay ground, because we're actually just using the language of the measure. But here, where we're introducing this term, and where the term's not defined other than as what we are interpreting the measure to mean, then I think we run into potential buzzword problems. And so I want to throw that out. I'm willing to go along with your wishes, but I'd suggest it's a potential danger.
When you say buzzword, I guess, are you in the legally problematic sense of a catchphrase in Colorado law?
Yeah.
Well, I think I disagree that it's a catchphrase. I mean, I see the concern. I disagree that it's a catchphrase of the sort that has been found to be problematic. The kinds of things that the court has permitted in law and said were not catchphrases, I guess, seem very broad and diverse. And equal opportunity is not as politically contentious as the kinds of things that I think have been interpreted as catchphrases. I think it's pretty clearly states what the proponents are seeking to do, which is to preserve equality of opportunity and programs that ensure equality of opportunity.
I think I agree with part of what you said, that equal opportunity is not really a contentious term because everybody's in favor of equal opportunity, right? But that leads to kind of the real heart of the problem, which is, do you really think that basically everyone agrees that what you're doing in Section 2 or in the second sentence is preserving equal opportunity programs? I mean, I just would suspect there'd be a lot of people who would think that is not really what's going on there, or who define equal opportunity very differently. And in that case, I think that's the danger I see. So, I mean, if you're fine with it, it's, I'm already in the minority up here, so, you know, if everybody else is fine with it, that's fine. I just wanted to point it out that it's potentially troublesome that we're interpreting what the measure does in a way that has some meaning to a lot of people. I think they understand equal opportunity, but in different ways. That's all I'm saying.
Mr. Banks.
And aside from, you know, is it a prohibition, the type of question that I first raised, I have to agree with Mr. Domenico that I'm also concerned with the use of equal opportunity, because the only place that term appears is in the heading, the section heading of the measure. Like I said, I don't know this area of law. I'm not as familiar with it as obviously others. I don't know if that's how you would characterize whatever may be permitted pursuant to the U.S. Supreme Court's interpretation of the U.S. Constitution. In terms of my thinking and sort of the direction I was going, because of a concern about using a phrase that isn't actually in the measure itself other than in the section heading, I guess the way I was going and is consistent with other comments that I've made is perhaps this title should start out similarly to 31 in terms of it's a prohibition against discrimination by the state, and then in the trailer you reference that it's making an exception, whatever this exception is, whatever it is allowing against that general prohibition, that's how we deal with the single subject. I'll just throw that out for consideration.
I think that is about the best you'd be able to do with this, but I that runs right back into the problems I had with the single subject, which is that I think it's misleading. That I don't think, I mean, it's very clear that this does something very different. I mean, what's trying to be done here is to create the exception, and the using the broad same language as 31 as the subject, I think really is, I mean, especially if both of these get on the ballot, which is possible, That really highlights why I think this is misleading, that you have two measures that we would be saying have the same subject and do essentially opposite things. And, I mean, that I think really goes why I don't think we can set a title, because this is just doing, it's either misleading, deceptive, or it's two contradictory subjects.
I guess I just, I have to, of course, disagree with that, but I think maybe rather than thinking of the second sentence as creating an exception, it really is defining the first sentence in substantial part in a way that makes what Amendment 6, Initiative 61 and Initiative 31 are trying to do very different. But whereas Initiative 31 and its proponents didn't feel that they wanted to define preferential treatment, what the proponents of Initiative 61 are doing is to say there are some parts of that goal, right? The goal of non-discrimination is important and valuable, and colored citizens believe in it, but we want to ensure that we define what's permitted and what's not permitted in such a way as to preserve certain things. But I think the goal is still non-discrimination. And certainly if I'm understanding this, if I'm understanding you correctly, are you suggesting that the beginning part of the ballot title would simply say, as it does for Initiative 31, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state, and then
yes,
would go on to have the remaining language?
Yes, and to include language and whether it's similar to what's currently in the staff draft about preserving the state's authority to take actions, you know, consistent with the U.S. Supreme Court's interpretations, but sort of that approach versus either a prohibition against denying equal opportunity or something else that's referring to equal opportunity in the single subject statement.
We certainly want to avoid getting into a situation where we're having to argue 2 weeks from now or 2 months from now about an impermissible catchphrase, and I would say the argument's been well set up. So if there's a way to avoid arguing about an impermissible catchphrase, that certainly is something the proponents would like to do. And I think that, again, the goal of this initiative is, in fact, to ensure and help define non-discrimination by the state. So that would certainly be comfortable to us.
Ms. Eubanks.
And I just want to state for the record that I think my concern on using equal opportunity, not getting to whether it's a catchphrase or not, it's just whether it's that's the appropriate phrase to use to describe the single subject. That's where I'm coming from at this point.
Well, I mean, as Mr. Domenico observes, this kind of goes to the heart of kind of what we're struggling with. I think I'm more comfortable starting out like we did with 31. And I'm maybe about to convince myself to change my mind, but that would mean basically the first two clauses being the same as number 31, a prohibition against discrimination and in connection therewith, you know, prohibiting discrimination, et cetera. And then the measures part ways in their titles when you get to the next clause in the titles. What I'm trying to figure out is, would we then be violating something because we would have confusingly similar titles? I'll just read out loud because I haven't had a chance to. I'm looking at my notes, and from court cases that says, say to the effect, nothing prevents conflicting amendments from being proposed. What is prohibited are conflicting ballot titles which fail to distinguish between overlapping or conflicting proposals. And then there's a reference in my notes to 1-40-106-3B, which supposedly says ballot titles shall not conflict with those selected for a petition previously filed for the same election.
As I understood it, I spent the morning looking at mm-hmm. this specific question, the conflicting ballot titles question. As I understand it, what's required is that the titles distinguish one from the other. And it seems to me that given the language that is, in fact, the distinguishing, not only the distinguishing language, but the distinguishing principles and concepts between the two initiatives, they are distinguishable and distinguished one from the other, even if they start with the same sort of very general clause.
Have to read a while. You have to proofread the two against each other before you find a difference. But there is a difference.
And also, I think this situation is a little bit more complicated than most situations where we're dealing with multiple filings by the same proponents on the same subject matter. Is you have different proponents for 31 as you do for 61, and so I don't think we can rest on any assurance that only one of these measures would be potentially submitted to the voters.
That's true. Well, and again, I guess I may change my mind at some point if called upon to reconsider, but I think it's better to start out like number 31. I think it's safer. It avoids the potential catchphrase, although I'm not sure that I agree it's a catchphrase, but at least avoids the issue. And it seems like starting out the same as number 31 is more faithful to the measure, even if I'm still troubled by what real effect the measures have and how they really are different. Thanks.
Well, if just to get us off the dime, I would move that we change the language beginning on line one to strike everything after concerning until the comma and substitute in its place a prohibition against discrimination by the state.
I'll second that.
Say a prohibition of discrimination?
Against. Against. Sorry, my voice isn't too good. Although I'm not suffering from the flu. All the way to the comma, but not including the comma.
So the expression of the single subject would be concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state. Ms. Hart, you're okay with that?
Yes. There's not a comma after concerning, right?
Concerning. Not anymore. Any further discussion? I think that was a motion, right?
And that's
I think
correct.
I seconded it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-1. Further suggested changes to the staff draft? Ms. Eubanks.
In terms of the references to public employment, education, and contracting that appear on lines 5 as well as line 6, and again, sort of looking at how it was drafted for 31, I'm a little concerned. I mean, I know that some folks would view public to go to all three of those terms, and looking at the text of the measure itself, knowing that it applies to public employment, public education, and public contracting, but whether or not to make it clear to insert public before education as well as contracting, just to make it clear for the voters so that there's no confusion about it somehow applying to private.
I'd support that.
Contracting.
Yeah. Okay. Is that a motion?
I would so move.
I'll second that. Any discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
And then there's the other references that start there on line 7. Same. With inserting public before education and before contracting.
Is that covered by your motion already?
I thought it was, but...
Okay, unless somebody objects, we'll just treat it as part of your original motion.
I know we talk faster than Ceci can type.
That's all it was.
But see, I think there's an extra space after public before the first education.
Just the justification.
Any other proposed changes to the titles, Ms. Eubanks?
And you know, we're attorneys and tend to complicate the language a lot, but the language on line 8 about "and interpretations thereof," referring to the Constitution, that's a little bit legalese for most folks, and I would suggest that we strike the that language "and interpretations thereof" and substitute as "interpreted." So it read the United States Constitution as interpreted by the U.S. United States Supreme Court.
I think that's more faithful to the proponent's intent, because we don't want to create any misunderstanding that there would be both the Constitution and the Supreme Court's interpretations of it, and that one could be consistent with one but not the other.
And
so
then
I would move that change.
I'll second that one.
Okay, that's been moved and seconded. And then the word "and" at the beginning of line 8, is that
straight? Are we deleting that one too?
Yes.
That's been moved and seconded. That would read consistent with the United States Constitution as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court, semicolon. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
I don't have anything else.
If no other suggested changes, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended, with the understanding that those same changes that were made in what is now lines 1 through 11 would be made in the later lines that are simply the same title but in the form of a question?
I would so move.
I'll second that. So it's been moved and seconded to adopt the staff draft as amended. Any further discussion?
And just to explain where my vote's going to come out. I mean, I think this does a good job of trying to track the language of the measure, but it really highlights why I think the measure itself is troublesome, in that the real heart of this measure, as the proponents have explained, is whether you call it the exception or the definition, or what they're really trying to do here is to preserve the state's authority to have these equal opportunity programs, as they call them. That concept is buried in the middle of this title, starting on line 6. Is where that concept comes in. And I agree it's related somewhat to a prohibition against discrimination. It's also essentially creating an exception to that. And so its relationship to what we're calling the single subject is really in that it doesn't do what the single subject says the measure is about, and so that's why I think we just it's impossible to set a title, because I think this does a good job of tracking what's going on, but it's just the real purpose is kind of hidden behind this statement of the subject. That's all.
And I think you could be right, but I'm, like I said, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt today the other way.
First
so.
Time for everything.
That you're right?
Yeah.
So the motion is the staff draft is amended. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. That concludes action on number 61. The time is 2:43 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
What was the time?
2:43. And what's it? Oh.
Is your hearing on the mill levy?
Yeah.
Are we taking a break?
That's expedited.
I guess we are. We'll take a 5-minute break. Thank you.